Morning, Tony. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And you?
I'm all right, thank you. Yes, it
Yeah.
is. I mean, the nights are no, the days are getting longer, the nights are getting shorter, which
That's the
is
one. That's the.
nice to know.
Yeah. It's a month's time before the clocks go forward, but that's another story. Wet ground has been an issue. I know that because it's been very wet.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, dogs that like to run then like to roll.
Oh, don't.
What are that? Can you explain that to me? Why do they roll? As far as I was aware, it was always to do with foxes and fox droppings and all the rest of it, but it's not, is it?
Well, some dogs just like to roll because they like to roll. Because I mean, you notice it in the snowy weather. A lot of dogs. We've got a friend who's got a Labrador, and that rolls. It throws itself on the ground and rolls. And sometimes that's about cleaning the fur because the snow is a very good way of cleaning things. It's yeah. It really it cleans fur. That's something you know. Obviously,
I get
within
the
the
snow
snow.
bit. I mean, we
But
all
as
like
far as when
that.
it, yeah, when it goes to mud and stuff like that, mine, I think she does it because she's determined to enrage me, and that it doesn't go any further than that in her life. It just she looks at me, and I'm that far back that she goes, "Go on then, run if you can. It's too slippery to run, so you never get me." And she knows my yell at a distance, and she sits up as if to say, "Oh, did you not want me to roll in that then?" And you think, oh, honestly. So, but some dogs, A, they can do it out of sheer devilment because they can do it because they know we're going to react. Some dogs do it. It can be a rank thing. It can be a breed type thing. A lot of the hunting, the strong hunting type dogs roll, and they can roll on a certain size. You'll find that your dog will tend to roll either on the left or the right of it, and it all means in the dog world, it all means something, and you have to find out find their book to find out what it all means. But it's yeah, so they do it deliberately on, as say, left or right or whatever. Some dogs just roll because they can roll, depending on the, as I say, if it's sandy or if it's snowy. But if it's a whole pile of fox or badger poo, which is nothing more ghastly if I'm
Oh,
honest,
yeah, that's
and
the bath
that's
if ever I saw
yes, and
it.
mine did it the other day, and we were with a chum walking, and fortunately, because the weather was so appalling, she'd got, and also it was a dull day, she'd got her fluorescent little equifleecy thing on,
Oh,
so you
yeah.
can see her where she
Yeah.
is. Not that she goes that far, but her coloration is such that you can't see her in the bracken and the gorse and the long grass. So it's great. And the added advantage is if she rolls, it's less on the dog and more on the coat, and so you can wash the coat. But the funniest thing was she rolled in the most ghastly pile of, I think it was badger poo, and
Oh, no.
I know her friend came over to see what she was doing and then tried to start a game, but she inadvertently caught my dog's coat with her mouth. She didn't not grab it. There was something, I don't know how she did it, but she clearly got a taste of what my dog had been rolling in, and the look on her face was priceless. She couldn't have pulled a more sour face if she'd tried. She was literally spitting, and she backed off as if to, "I'm not playing with you. Do you know what you smell like?" And anyway, so not every dog, you see, likes it. It's only the wicked ones in the world, I think.
Yeah, we took Archie out of the weekend, and it seems to me that spring is on the way because we saw some rabbits. I haven't seen any in a while, and he was off exploring all over the place and rolling at every opportunity and sniffing at just about everything, and then scent marking to boot.
Yeah, well, there you go. It says it all, doesn't it?
They're very well aware of the seasons changing, aren't they?
They are. Yeah, they definitely are. And if you get a nice day, yes, you can just sort of, I mean, I suppose even from our point of view, people say, well, you can feel it's quite spring-like. You just get a different feel about it, I suppose. And they would as well, wouldn't they?
Yeah, now he goes off lead and he goes running around at all sorts of places. And of course, with all the extra smells and the extra things these days, he gets a bit more daring, but and sometimes goes out of sight, which, if you're in a known safe place, is okay. But sometimes with some of these walks, you never know quite where they are if you can't see them. And there are all sorts of dangers, not necessarily natural dangers. Yeah, I'm talking about things that get put down by some very nasty people to try and, I don't know why they do it, to affect dogs. Things like rat poisons and that.
Mm.
You know, it's always a case of keep your eye on the dog and make sure they're always within your sight.
I think you do, and it is sensible to make sure you can see your dog at all times. Make sure you've got a good recall. I know it's difficult because, again, if they're rolling or if they found something of great interest, recall gets a bit diluted, if sometimes non-existent. So do have a backup plan if you need a squeaky board or something that the dog will be alerted to, other than you just yelling at them, or whistle, something like that. But there are some horrible incidences that we are hearing of, as you say, like rat poison being put down locally. A couple of vets had some dogs turn up being quite ill and being poisoned, and we've heard that it was some rat poison put out deliberately in an area where we walk.
I don't know why people do that. I mean, it's just, well, it's vile.
It is vile. And why would you? Because if you'd really dislike dogs that much, stay indoors, don't go out. Yeah. And there's some lovely dogs out there and lovely dog owners. So I know. And then the other thing is we're also seeing a lot of drugs problems where humans are taking lots of drugs of whatever age they are, meeting in groups, probably in areas after dark where it's difficult to police and slightly sort of off grid a bit, and then taking drugs. And then I believe it's the quick effect after taking these particular drugs is that you then need to go to the loo. And so they're going in bushes, or there's a place fairly near us where it's known that they even go on the path.
Oh.
And then the next day or whenever the dog walkers all turn up, a lot of the dogs are finding and eating it and then getting seriously ill because the drugs are still have been passed through the human system and are still active, and dogs are getting very ill. A friend of ours, her dog, was very lethargic and sick for about a week or so. No worse than that, but worse than that does happen.
Yeah, it staggers me, the human behaviour sometimes. And unfortunately, most of our dogs aren't actually prepared for some of that stuff. And being curious, they are going to try and find out what on earth it is.
Well, yes, and they're so driven by their noses, they're actually going to find it very quickly. As I say, a lot of this stuff isn't really hidden, but even if it is hidden, they're going to find it pretty quickly because it's something new. That, oh, I've not smelt that before, or if they can even get hooked on it and they say, I recognise that scent, so I'm going to go and get some more. And I suppose from the point of view that if drugs are addictive for people, maybe that, you know, when it's passed through the system, that can then equally become addictive towards the dogs.
Well, the effect on the dog is not going to be very good. That much is for sure. Which leads me really on to some of the other things. We hear all sorts of things politically about farms and farmers and the use, their future use and food and all the rest of it. And you also hear about lab foods. You know, foods that are sort of made in laboratories. This is actually happening for dogs, isn't it?
Well, it is. It absolutely is. And yes, it's all very well me enjoying my plant-based chicken Kiev. But it's happening for dogs now. I think it was this week or whenever it was that I think they're called chicken strips or something chicken-based
Probably very little chicken in there.
Well, I think it's a couple of cells from an egg, in so much as, and is that an actual chicken then? If it's an egg, who knows? So that's already been made into these non-meat strips for dogs. Frightfully expensive, I suspect. And also, you know, you do think, why, really?
Well, I'm going to ask you the conversation there because, I mean, you were talking about sort of some vegetable food that, you know, is vegetarian. No problem with that at all. No problem with anybody being vegan and stuff. But lots of people will turn around and say, but dogs eat meat. If you look at their teeth, they're supposed to eat meat. Why are we trying to make vegetarian foods for dogs?
I know.
Is there a reason for it?
Well, personally, I think it's balmy. Because they're meat eaters. I mean, they eat fruit, you know, fruit, vegetables, meat. They're not solely meat eaters, but ostensibly their teeth and their jaws are meant for ripping, shredding, pulling, you know, crunching, all that to shred.
Well, I'm guessing that the test there is you put three bowls down. One's a plate full of steak, or raw meat, or whatever. A plate full of vegetables and a plate full of fruit. Which one's the dog going to go for? And I think we all know the answer to that.
Exactly, I know. Well, I have to say that my Yorkshire Terrier was very partial to a Satsuma, so she might be sitting by the. I know she might be sitting by the fruit bowl. Who knows? Or they'd start. They'd be really quick and start at one end and go all the way down.
Yeah.
But yes, I know the majority of dogs will be sitting by the meat bowl.
Yeah.
I suppose the point is maybe the scary world is the scary point is the fact the world will be running out of various things, and to feed us and our dogs, we're going to have to feed them a load of old chemical nonsense.
Well, no, I don't think we are. That's the point. I mean, yeah, we can. Well, I mean, it's a choice for most of us if we want to eat vegetables and stuff as their primary source of food, but you know. Dogs, if you left them to their own devices, would probably be a lot more savage than they are. And they probably would just eat meat where they could find it, you know, rabbits, squirrels, whatever, if they were lucky to get them. And, of course, this is what the foxes do with the chickens, if they can. It's their you know, their food of choice. It's meat. So I can't think that the actions of humans are going to be too helpful in this one. Which kind of leads me on to another question, because you are a dog trainer, and you, like a lot of things these days, everybody looks online and thinks, oh, I can get the answer online.
Oh, yes, people tell us constantly. We tell them one thing and they say, oh, well, that place that you go to online, beginning with G, says blah, blah. And you think, you're paying me to tell you this, and we've been doing it for years and we know our thing. Anyway, yes.
It's a little more traditional. But the thing is, I've seen on some of the social media sites of recent times, online pet training, one-to-one online pet training. Now, forgive me for this, but I can't think that is going to do your dog any good at all, because dogs like the interaction with other dogs.
Well, yes, I agree with that totally. And I think that, I suppose, anyway, we offered it in lockdown, obviously, like lots of other people did. And the funniest thing, one of the ones that we did do, it was for a collie. I'm sure I told you this before, but anyway, this lovely couple, and they were expecting a baby, and they wanted some help because of what to do, not when the baby arrives, because I'm not a midwife as well. But anyway, no, I know it's extraordinary, but I can't do it all, Tony. Yeah. Anyway, so we were chatting away and we were trying to work with the dog, but all the dog did was hide behind the sofa. So we only ever saw the dog once, and it sat behind the sofa for the whole of the consult. So it is a difficult thing, and I personally, I'm with you on that, and I think really, even doing one-to-one where we go to people's homes, we do tend to say to people, you know, do try and come to a course, because you meet other like-minded people, you meet other dogs, which is totally what you need, which is that interaction with other dogs and how to go about it appropriately and what errors you could make or, you know, or other people have already made. And, you know, there's great lots of discussion, but you can read body language of your own dog, of other dogs. It really is the best way to do it. And the online thing, I think, really, again, is also, and I know it's a bit rude, but it's a bit of a cop-out, because you don't have to go anywhere. You can stay at home. And then people say, well, I'm so busy, I can't go to classes. Then you think, well, actually, why have you got a dog?
Because that was the next point I was going to make when you said that.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting thing, because you talk about the one-to-ones and that, and they have their place. There's undoubtedly a place for one-to-one, not necessarily training, but consultation about your dog. which may involve a little bit of training or it may not, but it does point you in the right direction of what to do next. If your dog's got a particular problem, you can be advised by someone such as yourself or other dog trainers that do this sort of thing give out the advice for that particular dog as opposed to a group session, because all dogs are at some point going to need that interaction with other dogs.
Yeah, definitely. But
the individual one to start with, I think, is possibly not a bad idea.
Well, one-to-ones are great if people perhaps have never had a dog before and it's a bit overwhelming and there's so much to learn so quickly and, you know, they can't always take it all in. And you think, well, if you do a one-to-one, you could say, well, we can help you in that area and that area. And it does help enormously. Feedback we get is, you know, a week later, all sorts of things have sorted themselves out and they've done various things and it's a great help. And then now let's move on to come into a class environment. Mm. But yes, and so I can see, I suppose, the online stuff would probably work for a behavioural consultation. But even so, there's nothing better than meeting the people, meeting the dog and seeing what the dog's like, you know, at its own home or again then in a class.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's that terrible, we even do sort of like private classes, but we bring in other dogs over a course of time.
Yeah.
If the dog's bad. But I know, I really do think a lot of it is it's easy for everybody. They just press a button. And I honestly believe people aren't concentrating when they're online either, because, you know, full well, they're probably either fiddling with their phone or there might be something going on in the background and they've got an ear towards that.
It's about the enjoyment of watching your dog improve and interact with other dogs, because as far as I can see, most of them are highly entertaining and willing to learn.
Oh, I love it. And it's just as you say. And every week they're different. Some dogs excel one week and then they're bottom of the class the next week, a bit like humans. So every week's different. But ultimately, as the courses go on, the dogs just get better and better. Mm. And it's lovely to see it. And it's lovely to see people actually looking and thinking, golly, you know, I didn't realise my dog could do all these things.
It's a wonderful thing. Anyway, we've got very quick minute on one last subject. We've mentioned this before about flea treatments and stuff for your dogs, but DEFRA have given out a warning, haven't they?
Well, they've asked vets and so on and so forth to actually woe up a bit on recommending so much flea treatment and all the sort of chemicals that we're putting onto our dogs, purely because it's getting, obviously it gets into their bloodstream and that's why in theory it can work, but then once it's in the bloodstream, then it, you know, all the dogs that poo, it goes into the poo, and then if the poo is not picked up, it then leaches out into the soil. The other point being it's obviously in their urine, so we know a lot of dogs like weeing in puddles and or jumping into streams and weeing in streams. So what's happening at the moment, DEFRA believe that everything's getting a bit contaminated courtesy of our dogs, which are really a bit more full of chemicals than perhaps they ought to be. And there's no great need for a massive amount of flea treatment. If your dog hasn't got fleas, you don't really need to treat it. It's like saying to somebody, well, you know, what do you do for your head lice?
That's moving away from the prevention, isn't it, really? Mm. And saying that, well, dogs for the most part can deal with this sort of stuff. And if your dog gets a problem with fleas, gets a flea treatment, deal with it.
Exactly, yes. And that's yes. But combing is really what you need to do. Grooming. And it's not about a clean dog. It's about grooming, which is very different from
that's
barfing.
An interesting experience in itself.
Not
and a subject for another day, I think, Wendy.
Yes.
We're out of time, I'm afraid. It's always great to catch up with you. And well, hopefully we can do this again in a month's time. For now, Wendy, thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you, Tony.